It is the Rhetoric Warriors podcast, back once again, coming at you from the intersection of politics, rhetoric, and comedy. That's a vague intersection. It's one of the least visited intersections, I think, in the world. I'm Dr. Dan, rhetoric PhD, escaped professor, stand-up comedian, comedy writer from late night Hollywood. The podcast, I convert the right, because come on, really? I talk to comedians and comedy pros about their thoughts on the world and politics, and I glean from actual rhetoricians, both academics and the real world people who are out there persuading, so we can all learn better. My guest is the third time. It's the third time we've had a podcast, and this one's an interesting one, I think. We lost a joke giant this week, a stand-up legend, I would say. SNL star from Weekend Update, great talk show guest, like had an entire career just as a guest, and as a host, had a couple of sitcoms here and there, a film, kind of a big career, probably not a like Cosby level career, but a big career. Norm Macdonald died this week. So we have Eddie Feldman, who's a longtime LA showrunner, exec produced a few shows, I think starring Norm, right? Weren't you?
The pilot, when he was on different ones, we worked as writers together and taking through my little thing. But yeah. And then the last thing I worked with him, I'll tell you about later, is that, you know, the pilot with him.
Cool. So Eddie's got some direct contacts, some experience with Norm. I've met Norm multiple times. He used to come by the Best Dance Sports Show and I hang out with the writers and stuff every once in a while. I think some of those guys played basketball with him. Ran into him a couple times at clubs. But not close to him, but really interested in his comedy. And so here we are. We're going to do this episode as Requiem for a Comedian, the Norm Macdonald tribute show. Eddie Feldman.
Yeah. Nice to see you. Always, Dan.
Yeah.
Under these circumstances, never good. But, you know, it's one of those things where I guess life and, you know, happens. And then, of course, with life happening, so does death to some of the, you know, the people that you've been around for a long time. It's just, you know, it's one of those things. It's not easy to talk about, but happy to talk about because, you know, actually Norm's career and I kind of paralleled and dovetailed together in and out for the past 30 years. So, you know,
it's considered him a friend. Right. It's such an odd time too. Like we're basically, everybody's basically in their own prison cells, but we've got, you know, connection to the other cells. So we're all in a big prison and we're all talking, you know, via this. And there's death. There's a specter of death everywhere, no matter how they try to hide it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hovering over the culture for the last 2 years. And now, like when people are getting picked off, even though it's not COVID, it just feels, I don't know, like the culture has suddenly become more death aware.
Yeah. So, well, there's so much, you're right. There's so much around us. We're friends or some, you know, somebody you don't know or knew. It's like either had COVID or this, it's just the regular thing. Is compounded by the new thing, the virus, you know, adding to that. Cause, you know, all of a sudden it's like, hey, what happened to your aunt? Oh, really? I was taking a walk today in the canals in Venice and this guy came along with his dog and cute dog. And he's like, oh, you know, my mother has COVID in the East Coast and she sent the dog cause she can't take care of it. I mean, that's a howdy do. It's like, how are you? My mother has COVID. It's like, oh really? I didn't know him. I mean, the dog was adapting quite well, but yeah, it's just that matter of fact, all part of life that we're kind of dealing with.
Don't you think it would have been different? Like, I mean, think of the earlier plagues. It was not this clean, right? Like if there was a wheelbarrow of bodies being pushed through the streets every morning to collect the dead, and then there was a vaccine wheelbarrow behind it, don't you think people would get the vaccine to be like, yeah, well, I see it, you know?
Yeah, well, I guess, but apparently, you know, in that with that other sort of plague, it's just human nature. You know, there's somebody who's like, I don't believe it, you know, that sort of thing. Or somebody really, what it really comes down to, obviously, as we mentioned before we got here, is somebody's making money off it more than anything. You know, it's as I said, it's somebody who's like, I buy stock in horse meds. And then I lie about that and use everybody and people buys it. And then, okay, hey, we're not doing any harm. We made some money. And then, you know, it's just there's money to be made. The anti-vaxxing is a moneymaker. That's what it's for.
Nobody's crazy. The amount of money, the fact that you can make money off ignorance and the how easy it is to convince people to believe certain things like that. Okay, I know I can get 20% of the population with this, and ergo, I'll just make our products align with that and then just say it. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, and that's why I bring it back to Norm. Luckily, I mean, for Norm, he passed away from one of the oldest ones, cancer. So it's like he's kind of the traditionalist, I guess.
Well, and you're going to get moral judgment if you die from COVID, if you're not vaccinated, you're going to get moral judgment because you chose to go down that dangerous path.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I'll tell you how I was thinking back, like, when did I meet Norm, and when my first recollection, although I know that we probably met before this, was working in Poughkeepsie, New York with him at Bananas Comedy Club in Poughkeepsie. So I grew
great comedians meet. That's perfect, right?
It's like, and it was a club where it was one of the it was like an hour and a half from New York City. It was right across the river from where I grew up. So I would always plan my like holiday, Christmas or Thanksgiving. I think almost every Thanksgiving I go work there that weekend. And I remember working with like John Stewart there and Norm, and and I know that Jimmy Fallon kind of started at that club working because he grew up where I did. But so what I remember about Norm at that one time was that I don't know who the opener was, but I think I was the middle act and Norm was closing. And while the opener was on and getting a good amount of laughs, he kept peering into the room and then coming back to me going, Eddie, hey, they're getting, he's taking all the laughs. He's got all the laughs. I go, Norm, what do you mean? He goes, sucking all the laughs out of the room. There's not going to be any laughs for us. I'm like, well, Norm, there's not like a finite amount of laughs. You know, it's just, and then he was like obsessed with it. I don't know. I'm just telling you, he's doing it again. It was just, I must have known Norm somehow from some else. You must have seen him because I knew this was him. I knew that was his take on it. And it was just, one of those things.
He had a sense of that kind of instant familiarity. You know, like he was so good at making you feel like you knew him. Like, I think a lot of people had that experience of him as an audience, right? Like, they're like, oh, I know this guy.
Well, he also had that delivery because he would just kind of go, hey guys, you ever see this? And it wasn't like, he wasn't like telling a joke. He was just conversationally getting into something that he observed that, at first started off like, and because they always talk about how Norm lied, and every comedian lies because that's built in, baked into what you do. But he would just kind of lead you on this path that, people still use even in journalism where, it'd be like, hey, I saw this guy with a dog, a homeless guy with a dog. And, and then you're like, oh, what? And which was one of my favorite shows. It's like, I said, a homeless guy with a dog. And I bet that dog is thinking, this is the longest walk I've ever been on. It's like, and I agree, that was the brilliance. It's like, take something that we can see and then give it that Norm spin. So, that's where the stand-up, when I first saw, his stand-up was like right away, you're like, oh, this is some brilliant stuff. And,
He would pepper. I mean, that was the other thing about him. Like he had that, you said, conversational kind of friendly every person delivery. Like he was just having a conversation with you. It was just peppered with great joke writing. Like he could write a sharp joke.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, so let me tell you this. So let me tell you how then, so wherever we worked there, we did that. So then what happened, sometime after that is when I kind of came in contact with Dennis Miller, who I knew a little bit before he got Saturday Night Live. I met him really the night that he auditioned for Letterman at Catch a Rising Star. We met at the bar. He had me come in and watch his set. He killed. He got Letterman. Later, he got Saturday Night Live. And then started working with him somewhat on these college tours. And then when he was doing his first talk show, for Tribune, which was one that they hoped to take over for Carson, because Carson was retiring, that's how he hired me first in New York, just to write jokes and send them in. And then 2 weeks into that, he called to say, hey, well, one of the writers is leaving. You think you come out here and It's like, well, yeah, sure, of course. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, will I come to LA and be a writer on a TV show? Let me think about it. Literally, I was in, when I got that, I was in Buffalo doing a college, and I was like on a Saturday, and he wanted me there on Monday morning. So I had to literally find how to get back in it. So anyway, so when I get to LA and get to the show, you know, my first day, well, who's there? But one of the writers was Norm Macdonald. And so it was like, you know, we obviously knew, you know, good to see each other. And so what found out that the writer I was replacing actually was Norm. And I was like, well, what's Norm doing? And Norm was going to go over to the Roseanne show. He got a job as a sitcom, which obviously it was kind of a step up. But the story, and I'm sure Norm would tell you this too, was, as you know, the daily grind of writing monologue jokes for a 5-night-a-week show is, you know, you're supposed to be pumping out 25, 30 jokes a day, you know, desk bits, all that stuff. Norm was writing one joke a day. So he's handing him one joke, good joke, but one joke. Obviously Dennis is a friend, and then he got the opportunity, goes, Norm, yeah, go and do that. But then I find out later, when I tell my friend, as you know, Mike Gibbons about that, who's well worked together about the thing. And then Mike says, well, wait a minute. He goes, maybe you didn't know this, but to give Norm credit, when Dennis Miller asked Norm for a writing sample to be a writer on his show, Norm gave him a writing sample and only sent in one joke. So he got the job off of one joke. And so I guess he kept feeling, that's all I need to do. So once a day, one joke a day. But it was funny because Norm was there for like 2 more weeks where we overlapped. And, but Norm's office, it was him and Drake Sather. I don't know if you ever worked with Drake or knew of Drake.
I know who he is, but I never met him.
Yeah, Drake was another, I would say, died too young, brilliant comedian, very darker, I would say, than Norm in some respects. You know, he went on to write Larry Sanders and Zoolander, but very, you know, he had a very distinct point of view. Again, here's Drake's sort of thing. One time, in that show, we're talking with a comedian, you know, one of the writer comedians, and we were talking about some club and about how great the club was. I think it was like the Trelfalmador in Buffalo, which was a great venue for comedians. And Drake said, it comes over and goes, hey, what are you guys talking about? Said, oh, we talked about the Trelf and what a great club it was. He goes, oh yeah. He goes, yeah, that was a great club. He goes, I almost did my allotted time. Which is the perfect comedian thing, because, you know, the idea that, oh, I almost made it through my whole set. That's how great it was. So it was a great joke. But so Norm and Drake were in this office. So when you went in there, this is, you know, Norm is smoking, of course, and blowing the smoke out the window, probably because you're not supposed to smoke. So you always get a taste of Norm. And Drake is like, besides writing great material, he's also moonlighting, writing letters, basically letters to the editor of Swank magazine. He's got some side job. So it was this, you know, between, it was always fun to go in there because you're like, what are these guys up to? But I will digress a bit because, you know, that show, the first show there. So there was Norm Macdonald, there was Drake Sather, there was John Rigi, who wrote Larry Sanders and also 30 Rock. There was Steve and Leto, a comedy team from Chicago that wrote Space Jam, that created Space Jam and also wrote The Santa Claus. Max and David created Will and Grace.
Wow.
And then Mark Brazil was on that staff who created That 70s Show.
This is like the Sid Caesar
show. I know. No, you forget that, you know, while it didn't only last to 6 months, it was, you know, a pretty amazing. And Nick Bakay, who was a sidekick, and then we shared an office, went on to run Mom and Paul Bart. You know, he's written those movies. So, yeah, it was in that, you know, and Kevin Rooney, a brilliant, you know, writer who went on to a number of sitcoms. It was a show of shows. And that was really Dennis's kind of like, he's very good at picking writers in comedy, which I think you'll agree because he had picked you to write for him.
Yeah, so. Of course. This guy's got a radar, man.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Well, between, you know, Sandler and Spade, he always had that ability to go, all right, this guy's a great writer.
Yeah, he always knew great jokes. I was telling somebody that the other day about Dennis, that during rehearsal, when somebody would hit like a really, you know, perfect sanguine joke that was perfect in his voice, he'd always be like, who wrote that one? You know, and he called me Ben Grimm. So I'd be like, I was Ben Grimm, buddy.
So, you know, obviously, you know, Norm fit right into Dennis's, what he was looking for, because he loved his stuff. I would say that, you know, Norm, here's a story, something. Norm, people, you know, as great a joke writer and comedian was, Norm's social skills, like many comedians, lacked. You know, he never drove. He doesn't drive. Maybe later he drove, you know, recently. But back then, you know, he didn't drive. He would have to get a ride to the studio, and he would take a city bus. When he worked at Roseanne, he would take a city bus. So he's riding a bus, you know, with a, you know, and here's this well-paid comedian and comedy writer going to Roseanne on the bus. A couple of times, he'd have to go for auditions and take the wrong bus and end up in a really bad neighborhood and have to call like his Mark Gervis, like, yeah, I don't know where I am. They're not looking at me. They're not too friendly. Come and pick me up. Somebody had told me once that they stayed in a condo, some sort of thing with Norm, and they had gotten like hamburgers to make ham. There was a couple of grills outside. Each place had like their own grill. And they said to Norm, they go, hey, we're going to get some hamburger, grill some hamburgers. Do you want to do it? He goes, oh, yeah, give me some hamburger. So they got him the hamburger. And so they go and cook their stuff. And then they look out, and Norm's at the grill. And it's like, and he's like, hey, it's not working like you guys. Well, he never formed the hamburger patty. He just put the loose meat on the grill. And they said, at first we thought, oh, he's joking around, but he had no clue how to do that. And so I remember this, you know, because again, you know, it's like, okay, so that's how. So before he left, Norm and I are walking down Sunset Boulevard, and he's talking about going to Roseanne. And then he looks over, and there was this big restaurant called the Spaghetti Factory. I don't know if you remember.
I remember, sure.
It's almost like the Olive Garden, but, you know, similar sort of thing like that. And as we walk by, Norm looks over, and he goes, hey, see that place over there? I go, yeah, the Spaghetti Factory. I go, you don't want to go to lunch here? He goes, no. He goes, one time I worked there. And I'm like, what? I go, you worked there? I go, what did you do? He goes, I was a chef. And I flash back to the hamburger thing. I go, a chef? What are you talking about? He goes, hey, when I got here, I first got to LA, I didn't have any money. So I saw they had a help wanted sign there and for a chef. So I went in and I applied, and then I just wrote down these restaurants that I used to go to in Canada. So I cooked at them. And I go, what happened? He goes, well, they hired me as a chef. And I go, they did. And he goes, yeah. And then at lunchtime, I worked a lunch shift, and they put me behind the grill. And I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just standing there. And he goes, all these people are coming in, yelling at me with orders. And I go, well, what did you do? He goes, I just walked out. It's like, what? You know, and so it's just, you know, that's kind of the norm. That, you know, his life was comedy because Norm was, you know, that character.
Yeah, he was a true, and you get that feeling like this isn't an act. He's just reporting on, like, his stand-up was just reporting on what went on that day, you know, in his life, because he's so at odds, so out of kilter with the way everybody does things.
Yeah, I remember the one other joke that I always liked of his was, again, just, it kind of, you know, his comedy does come from like a brainstorm, like, hey, you know, like, oh, he finally realized something. And it's like, you know, everybody goes, hey, you know what? You know, never give somebody, you know, like a lottery ticket for their birthday. And, and it's like, because you're like, hey, Bob, what's up? He goes, oh, yeah, I remember that lottery ticket. Why? He goes, what? $100 million. Wow, 100. Yeah, that's great, Bob. That's great. I go, hey, I forget. What did you give me for my birthday? Like, oh, I guess no chance of that mug skyrocketing in value. But it was, you know, it starts out with just a, hey, I figured something out. And then it takes you on the journey of that.
Well, Well, and his stuff, he did talk about everyday life. Like, he wasn't an esoteric comedian. He was a thinky comedian. There were always thoughts in there, but it was more about what was going on in everyday life. I think it's one of the reasons why people related so well to him from the very beginning, you know, because he was talking about things everybody was doing.
Right. Yeah. It was all that little bit. It was his inability at life that everyone shared that sort of gave you the thing. I mean, Brian Regan is a lot like that. You know, I think we've talked, there's like the two Brian Regans. There's the smart Brian, and then there's the dumb Brian, or the ill, I always should say, the ill-informed Brian that is really all of us. You know, that's why we relate to that sort of thing, that his comedy, because his thing is he sets you up with the Brian is smart and that sort of thing, and then leads you into this other character, which is us, which is the ill-informed, you know, Brian. So in a way, I would say that both those guys, who are really, in my opinion, and actually I know Dennis Miller's, because Brian's also one of his guys, you know, if you study that part of comedy, they lead you on that same path, you know, and that's why they're so relatable, because they're things you do. You know, it's that simplest thing is when Brian's thing is you get out of the cab at the airport and you know, the guy goes, hey, have a nice trip. And you go, you too. And then Brian, the ill-informed Brian, goes, oh yeah, that's right, you're not going anywhere, you're going to be in a cab. And like, you too, yeah, you too. Like, you know, it's just we've all done it. You all sort of take it that way.
That's funny. It's kind of combining the dumb sitcom character and the sharp, you know, witty sitcom character at the same time, right? You say the dumb part and you get to do the shots.
Well, Well, that's why I always said with Brian, you know, I remember talking with his manager, Brian Regan, it's like the trouble with him being in a sitcom is he's two people, and how does he play both? And the ill-informed, you know, slow Brian, you know, you can't have, unless they're like, hey, there's the twins and one's smart, one's the, you know, it's very hard because you're playing two characters, which works on stage. But for a sitcom, it's like, no, you need to be that one person.
Yeah, you can't do that. Yeah, you can't do that quick switch, you know, in a narrative. Right. But that's really interesting. I think, and I think you saw it with Norm too, as his career went on. Like, I watched some of his early clips on talk shows and then his later clips, and he got very articulate. Like, his writing got much more literate as he went on. Like, he had a lot of subterranean, you know, but there was a lot of imagery. There's a lot of writing in there as he went on.
Oh yeah. He definitely would you know, do that. And made that, as I said, a guest, made that into his own. I mean, you always want, as you're, you know, in interviews or for a talk show like that, you always want a guest who brings a lot, you know, like Carvey. There's Dana, what's up? And then boom, hey, we got to go. Well, you know, so Norm would really craft those. You know, there's on YouTube, the moth joke that they talked about.
Really good writing in the middle of this old joke.
It wasn't just hey, I'll bang, bang, bang. It was more like, hey, this is my chance and sort of things. And but again, it always kind of comes from that place of hey, I'm not really good at society like you. Remember, Norm would tell you that he always liked to gamble. I remember he told me one of the first, he has this gam, you know, he loved it too much, as many people have. And he's telling me this story. He goes, it's one time finally made some money, and I invited my family from Canada to take them to Vegas. I'm going to treat them to go to Vegas. So he goes, I got like five grand in my pocket. And I meet them at the airport, and we go to the hotel. He goes, and then my family, it's like, they're old school. So once we get to the hotel, my parents, I think it was his parents, were like taking their clothes out of suitcases and putting them into the drawers. They're like, what are you doing? It's like, they're very like housekeeping. So while they're doing that, because I go down to the casino, and literally goes in like 20 minutes, I lose the 5 grand. Whatever he betted on. He goes, then I go upstairs. As soon as I get up there, he said, the last draw is closed, and they go, okay, Norm, let's head down to the casino. He goes, and I'm broke. I already lost every penny I had that I was going to spend on my parents. So yeah, he's, you know, that's another, And I'm sure he mined that, and you know, he's telling me that story, but somewhere along that world, I'm sure he incorporated that.
Yeah, he clearly had his deviances too, right? I mean, he was mischievous. I can never say that word. He's like Regan, had that boyishness that covered, you know, that kind of stuff. But he clearly had his deviant areas. Like, I know he had a gambling thing, and I don't really know that much about him personally, but he didn't bring a lot of that on stage.
Right.
You know, but you could see it.
Yeah, no, you knew the character. You expected it. You thought, okay, that's a guy that goes to Vegas and plays poker, you know, and that sort of thing. It's like he's got, you know, his dilemma is, do I spend $5 on blackjack or another pack of cigarettes? You know, it's like, I don't know. That's, you know, that's his.
He commented on World Series Poker for a while, wasn't he? He was a.
Oh, yeah, I think, yeah. I didn't watch that much, but yeah, he was, you know, as they say, kind of sublimated his problem into a job. And that's what I, you know, because again, he was a fan of, he loved sports. He bet, you know, out betting and stuff, but he just loved, you know, the sports part of it. But as a guest, you know, yeah, we had, then after he went to Roseanne and did those things, and remember,
why was he at Roseanne? Because that was Matt Berry and all those guys were already there, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it was kind of, so that I'll tell you, that probably was 1991-ish, 92-ish, or, and I think for a few years there, you know, because he had, you know, kind of went in that world before then, you know, getting the job on Saturday Night Live. We had him, I don't think he ever came back as a guest and on the Dennis Miller thing, but Dennis Miller Live, you know, he definitely, over that 10 years, we used him a lot. You know, Norm was always on. And in fact, for the Millennium special, which was, you know, 2000, Norm was a guest on the special, which, and that, the idea of that was Dennis Miller goes back in time and does our show, you know, it was like in the 1200s, you know, 12th century, in the 16th century. And then we played that out in 10 minute blocks. And then the only thing that always happened was, no matter what century, Norm would be a guest. Norm was the guest. And he talked like he was from, different times. And so we had always, you know, used him that way, because he was, again, he always killed. Dennis loved him. Everybody loved him. And I think, right, you know, it was like then when he just had gotten, you know, and then had moved into the SNL, you know, spot there for Weekend Update, you know, which I forget, like, who he, I'd have to go back.
Nealon? Did he follow Nealon?
He might have followed Nealon. Yeah.
I don't know if that was vice versa, because Colin Quinn was after him. But I remember it being pretty vanilla when Nealon was doing it, and Norm just came in like a sledgehammer out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah. 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 He brought his, you know, he had like Ross Abrass was one of his writers, and, you know, right. So we don't, you know, we always talk about that. Norm had a distinct point of view, so you knew what to write for and, you know, what not to write for. And Frank Sebastiano, I think, was also, you know, somebody told me that it was a writer, Jim Wise, was there for a short period of time, just as Norm got fired, and they let Jim listen in as Olmeyer fired him. That was their treat, and they kept for the bit. But I mean, that was always a big sort of controversy too, you know, him being fired because he was doing OJ jokes, but Norm, you know, that's Norm. It's like, you can't, don't tell Norm not to do it, because he's gonna do it. And he, you know, for Norm to go out on the limb is nothing. That's what his whole, you know, he's always out on the wire, and he's always thinking of how to stretch. I mean, one time, another time with Norm, so in that Dennis Miller Live, our studio is right next to, I want to think it was Craig Ferguson, maybe not Craig Kilborn. So Norm was going to be a guest on Ferguson or Kilborn. We always ate dinner in this conference room right by the stage, and didn't know he's on, but all of a sudden Norm sees us and wanders in. So, I mean, there's like 20 people eating dinner, and right away Norm only sees this as, Oh, an audience. Because I said, I go, Norm, what are you doing? He goes, oh, I'm on Craig Ferguson tonight. I go, oh, so, hey, what jokes are you doing? He goes, I pitched them this joke, but they wouldn't let me do it. And then he launches in for this filthy thing, which is basically how he was watching porn and worried because he was too focused there while pleasuring himself on the guy. So he goes, I keep focusing on the guy, you know? And I'm looking at him. I'm like, why am I focusing on this guy? Because I'm wondering if I'm half gay. I could be half gay because I realize I'm So he launches this whole sort of diatribe, which is brilliant. And then at the end he goes, yeah, so they won't let me do that one. And I go, but you just did. He goes, yeah, I know. So that, you know, that was the thing of like, okay, they told he had that plan that's what he had told the, you know, the talent guy, this is what I'm doing. I'm like, no, Norm, I don't know if you can really, you know, do that. So yeah, there was always, and then one of the last times that I worked with him was for this pilot that was called Norm McDonald is Trending on TBS. And so they're going to do a pilot with Norm, very much a little bit like the, you know, the topical shortest shows. Had a little, you know, more sort of, like trending. So it's jokes, but they're trending. So I think for some reason I came in a little bit late to that. And so they had been, really Norm had been compiling jokes for the pilot and pieces and shooting stuff and different things. And, you know, Laurie Joe, who his companion, longtime producer, was the executive producer of that. And she's great. I'm sure she's devastated by Norm, you know, it's a Norm. And so, before the pilot, a couple days before the pilot, she said, hey, will you go with Norm and I? We want to just go over the material. You know, we'll go to Musso and Frank's and hang out. I'm like, yeah, sure. So, what happened was Norm has been collecting all his favorite jokes for the monologue to set. He's like, he picks all the ones. And so Laurie Joe sends me this packet and then I read through them and everything. And so we're at Musso and Frank's and Norm goes, hey, what do you think of the jokes? They're good, right? I'm like, hey, Norm, they're really funny jokes. I go, what did you do? He goes, yeah, every day they send jokes and I just pick the ones I like. I go, well, I went through them. Norm, all the jokes you picked were very funny, but they're all like prison rape jokes. He goes, yeah, but they're funny. I go, yeah, but they're all rape jokes, all prison rape jokes. Remember, the name of your show is Norm McDonald's Trending, not Trending Prison Rape Jokes. He goes, yeah, I guess I didn't think of that. I go, yeah. I go, we have to kind of, you know, keep some, but then we got to spread them out a little bit. So for the pilot, TBS doesn't go, what is this? So he wasn't, you know, that's that same sort of thing of, how do I put a hamburger on a grill is a little bit, and they're like, but how do right. I put jokes together? And then, yeah, you just know, yeah, they're all funny. Let's go back and look at what you threw out and pick some of those and we can, you know, do the pilot and kind of figure that out. But that's just, you know, working with different people, working with Norm is, you know, is this funny? It's funny, but yet there's a network going, we can't do that, you know.
Yeah, I remember talking to Gibbons. I think Gibbons ran his sports show that they had for a while.
I think so, yeah.
And I think I submitted there and Gibbons telling me that almost everybody that submitted would submit like rape jokes or OJ jokes. Like that's the only thing that Norm wanted to do. And I'm like, well, that's what he does all the time. But I get it. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then you're at wherever you're doing, fine. But if you're trying to sell it, you know, and Norm is, I know I've heard also heard stories where it's like, hey, we're really close to for Norm to get a show. And then he goes into the network and they don't have the show because Norm is not, he's not like the political guy who can somehow go, oh, you know what? Now, like Brian Regan is like, now I'm this Brian Regan. There's one Norm. And so if you bring him in there, that's what you're going to get. If you're going to hire him, you get Norm. So you either like Norm or don't like Norm, you know, and so that's the type of also comedian, you know, where like, and I remember doing a club, I thought it was in Canada or something, and Norm was there the week before and he had people walking out for whatever, you know, and they were complaining about that. And it's just that it's like, well, okay, but no, he's not going to change his act. This is, you knew who you were booking and he's hilarious. It's like, okay, didn't work, but don't, you know, don't go looking at me. I'm
right.
I think yeah, he's funny.
He played Austin Cap City a lot and would come down and you could tell a lot of times he was working stuff out up there, but he walked people all the time. And I would just sit there and be like, you got to at least appreciate what he's doing. Like, it's not always formed up as a joke. Like he would work things on stage sometimes, but yeah. You got to say that this is at least interesting to listen to. You got to give him that.
Well, you know, I think you have to be kind of know. And as we know, comedy clubs, it's like, we're going to comedy club tonight. It's like, who are you seeing? I don't know. You know, I remember Dimitri Martin talking to him several years ago, but he had said, you know, he had found because people knew him online, he could go to different cities and play the 300 or 400 seat sort of theaters. And he said, you know, I do great there. He goes, but if I was in a comedy club and then people are just going, I'm a little weird and different. You know, I couldn't really headline, but I'm finding, you know, my own audience. Norm, again, ahead of the time, probably would have been the perfect, like, hey, I know I'm seeing Norm. There's five, you know, and eventually people did that. But that, and again, so that was still many years ago when I'm talking about the walkout sort of thing.
Yeah.
But,
well, and I think it's one of the reasons why he was so loved in the stand-up community was because he would not change, right? That's one of the things that we valorize is that you are what you are. You do it no matter what. You do it no matter if it's a network or if it's a bad audience.
Yeah.
That is seen as somehow a stronger type of comedian than somebody who adapts and, you know, jumps around. Right. And,
yeah. I mean, his jokes are kind of, you know, I remember the one other joke I always, it's funny. Again, he had to be that thing. It's like, hey, how do you be like the guy, you know, that there was a plane crash. Was it, okay, I forget what it was, but somebody, and right after that, Norman's like, hey, how do you like to be one of those guys got to clean up after that plane crash? Which again, taboo. And I'm sure in a comedy club, he's like, yeah, it's like, you know, people find like a license and, it, you know, and it'd be Dan French, 162 pounds. Hey, Bob. Shovel 162 pounds of that gunk in his bag. It's like the grimness of it, but it's still, you know, in the club, you're like, oh my God, I can't see, you know, it's just what people's, you know, things that are, you know, I have a little bit more room to talk about with Norm. It's like, hey, that's what you're getting. You know,
but how much of that was, like I said, I didn't know him well. How much of him was like that work in the dark vein, like he clearly liked it, but he was a very light character, especially early in his career on stage. You know, like how much of that darkness was his real comic voice versus the guy just liked to play with comedy no matter what it was?
I think it was a mix. I think he ended up, you know, like every, you know, a good comedian, you know, that's when you talked about Norm, about his, he had some sitcom, he had those. Somebody was just reading about it. It's one of those things of like, hey, some people are great stand-ups. They'll do other things, but you know, it's not like, well, he wasn't, you know, as you said, he wasn't this, he wasn't that. He goes, no, but he was unbelievable. You know, Carlin was, you know, that's what Brian Regan. It's like, he's great. You can get them in some of the other things, but Norm was pure, you know, performance, me talking to you either as your host or to the audience, and I'm telling you jokes that, you know, I would lie to you about stuff. I'll tell you stories, storyteller, but that's what it is. And I think, you know, as most great comics do, they develop and they grow with age, as opposed to, it wasn't a gimmick. So as he got old, talked about stuff, I think he developed more and more that kind of like, how do I get this darkness across now? Because he's smart enough to realize like, I don't want walkouts. So how can I do that? You know, and I think, I don't know if I ever told you, but years ago I worked with Gilbert Gottfried and Scott Carter, who ran the, you know, Bill Maher show for all the time. So we had got booked, the three of us, to do something like 4 hours away from New York City and like in Pennsylvania, like it was Amish country. The waitress from Catch a Rising Star booked it. And so she picked up me, Scott, and then picked up Gilbert, who was living with his mother in High Rise and Avenue A. And he came back with literally like a straw suitcase you see out of the Road to Morocco, and all the old women are like, "Hi, bye, Gilbert." Well, when Gilbert gets up to see the venue, and we see the people forming all like farmers, and Gilbert's like, "Oh, this isn't good. No, this is not good." But Gilbert, the brilliance of Gilbert was there was an extra microphone. He brought it up on stage. He would do a bit of Gilbert, the strange Gilbert, and nobody would laugh. He goes, "That's not funny. You know, that's not, you need a joke." And then he walked the other microphone and tell an old joke that he knew. And he got through it because he knew his audience and he knew how to, that. And, you know, Norm would just, "That's what I," you know, he's not doing that. He's like, "I'm telling the joke," you know. Yeah. In fact, he may even be darker with, you know, if I have silence, just means, all right, now I'm going for the really dark stuff because I find that funny. I'm going to be laughing at you.
What do you think it was about him as a guest that so many people really liked? Like Letterman loved him. You know, it was the last comic he had on the Letterman show. What was it about him as a guest that was different?
You know, I think because all these guys, you know, Letterman, Leno, and all these guys, you know, if you're a true stand-up yourself, you see that in Norm. You know that what he's doing is honed by years on the road, and you respect, you know, that. I mean, I sat with Letterman once because they really for a job interview to kind of take over the show. And you know, we talked for an hour, but a lot of it was more because of stand, you know, we kind of bonded over stand up. The show was what it is, you know, we knew that, but it was more like, "Hey, I work with this guy, you know, over here, you guy work with him." Howard was one of the first, and it was that. And I think so when those guys, you know, get with Norm, it's really what you're seeing is kind of like you'd see the two of those guys, whether it was, you know, in a green room or at a bar, you know, that's what they'd be talking about.
Right.
And you know, it would be, it's the naturalness of it. And I think that's where they tied, right. They love Norm because they knew like, "Hey, I'm going to get great, funny stuff. And I understand who he is and where he comes from." I think, you know, that's why as a favorite.
Yeah. It was always super fun to watch them because it was like, they were almost on stage with him, sitting in a chair next to him while he was doing a bit. And you knew they were like, "Oh, I'm in the vortex of, you know, a Norm bit." And they're just like, they're going along for the ride.
Yeah. And also you don't know where the fun part for them and for the audience is, I don't know where he's going to go with this. Where is he going? I mean, you know, and who knows? I'm sure if you talk to, you know, Frank Smiley or some of the other kind of talent bookers, they'll be like, "Well, I didn't know he was going to do that. And I never told Conan he was going to do that. He just did it. Conan just knows. Okay. You know what? Norm said he's doing this, but I really can't be sure."
Right.
You know, because think of it, you know, the moth, he doesn't want to give it away of that. He, you know, somebody was talking about Johnny Carson and watching some of the old shows now, which are available. And they said, you know, I noticed that really people don't really answer Johnny's questions. You know, I said, I go, "Yeah, it'd be interesting to talk to like the talent bookers, because my guess is what Johnny Carson didn't want to do is to get, you know, for the audience, it seems like it's unexpected. If I ask you, 'Hey, you've been to Malibu, tell me about Malibu.' It's like, okay." But I'm like, "So you've been doing anything good?" Or I ask you something that just, you know, I could see him just saying, "No, you tell your story," because then I'm surprised. I'm like, "Oh, we're going there." And I said, "I'm not sure, but that's you know, as a talk show. So it doesn't seem like it's all rehearsed. You know, it's more casual." And I'm sitting there, "Here's a guy at the bar." It's like, "Hey, did you drive here?" It's like, "I lost my job." I didn't ask if you lost your job, but you're telling me that from this. So it's just one of those techniques that the master Carson kind of passes on. I'm sure Letterman and all those guys were like, I don't want to just set it up. It's, that's kind of boring.
Right. Well, and I think that was one of Leno's master skills, telling bits within, you know, sitting there as a guest. He was really at his best right there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Those, the guests for like, you know, when you go back and you look at the Dangerfields of that, and, you know, material, you know, that's why Carson loved like Dangerfield, because it would be like, Rodney, what's up? Oh, you know, like, yeah, you've been to it. You're married, but I'm married. And, you know, it's just like, again, that's kind of the card thing. Set it up. But Norm, I think, is much more. I'm taking you on the journey. And you're going to be surprised. So your reaction of it is such that you're with the audience of like, oh, I didn't know you're going there. That's, you know, it's great. I sit here night after night, blah, blah, blah. Here's somebody coming on. That's very different.
Yeah. He was a great guest on Best Damn too. And Tom Arnold was sort of ensconced in that chair as the comedian, but I was always like, man, just move him and move Norm in there and watch the show just completely change the tenor and the tone of it and the level of analysis and all that stuff. Cause he would find really interesting angles and clearly interested in sports. So he could just talk and talk and talk and then just drop jokes as he went.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was that, and also he knew sports because he lost money on them.
Pay close attention.
Yeah, very close. Yeah, he knew them. He just didn't know what the outcome was of the event. he knew who the players was and that sort of thing. So yeah, I mean, you know, if you look back at the comedians today, yeah, Norm is kind of that. Also, remember, Norm came about at that kind of, as they call it, the comedy boom, where there were a lot of clubs where he got to go out and and work in them and develop in Canada, New York, and L.A. and really, you know, master that craft that he ends up, using, you know, no matter what he was doing for years and years.
Yeah, and I saw him. I remember the first time I saw him was on his MTV set, and I remember the joke that got me, and I was just like, he'd done a few other bits that became popular with him and known for, like Backseat People and that, you know, that kind of stuff. But it was the cliff diving. Either you're a grand champion or you're stuff on a rock.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, that was one of the moments when I'm like, oh, I'm going to try that stuff.
Yeah.
Because that line was so perfectly written and so obtuse. It didn't give you the whole joke. You couldn't see it coming. And so I'm like, there's some art in that.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And that's what I think in his writing. I think again that, you know, yes, he can act and yes, he can do, but really his forte was stand up or, you know, being funny in a live sort of situation. And I never saw him. I don't know if he worked, I'm sure he worked somewhere in Vegas, but I never saw it, which is always interesting when people go like to the middle America of it. But I'm sure he worked at the Riviera there in some places. But I don't know. It's always interesting.
Yeah, okay, I can't see him. Yeah. I couldn't see him like wanting that every night kind of, you know, jam on making a living in Vegas with.
No, just in comedy. Here's a little off topic, but like this. So I was talking to a friend of mine about how comedy has evolved. And then we were talking about like vaudeville, about how back then every vaudeville show had a drunk act, a guy who act drunk and go off the stage. And then it brought up this comedian, you know, from the 70s, Foster Brooks, I think, you know, who was a master of
the master drunk guy.
Well, I don't know if you know, but so at the MGM Grand, I think in the 80s and 90s, there was an animatronic Foster Brooks at the bar that would sit at the bar and it would move, you know, like a Disney thing. It would automatically, and it would do Foster, had Foster Brooks' voice. I don't know whoever built it, whoever did anything, or how that came to be and why Foster Brooks. It was at the lounge bar at the MGM Grand. And then, so I was like, I went back there years later and it was gone. I'm like, oh, they must have taken it out. I go, yeah, I wonder what happened with it. So I Googled, you know, what happened to Foster Brooks thing? So on roadsideamerica.com, where they were, you know, this site, this guy said, he explained the whole thing like I just did of Foster Brooks. He said, so I went back and he goes, there's good news and bad news. He goes, the bad news is It's not there anymore. But let me tell you the good news is there's a story behind it. Because so I went there and I asked, like, hey, whatever happened to the Foster Brooks thing? He goes, and the bartender said, oh, Mike Tyson, before a fight, got agitated by it and destroyed it. Like, what? It's like, he what? Animatronic Foster Brooks got to Tyson. I'm just right. Don't talk to me that way. And destroyed it. Man.
That's so, got to be a sketch somewhere. Somebody's got to put that in something. That's
well,
hilarious.
I think it could be that Tyson, the Cartoon Network, should be him. You know, gonna say, this coming. I don't need to take that from you. Yeah. So
I like the animatronic insult comic. You know, it just sits there and insults whoever walks by.
Maybe they could have the animatronic Jeff Ross could get in there.
Well, it's like the old story of Otto and
George
and somebody stabbing the puppet.
Yeah. Know? Yep. Yeah. Yep. I've heard that before. But yeah.
When was the last time you saw Norm?
Well, so the last time I saw Norm, I was crossing Lincoln Boulevard when I was living in Marina del Rey, and I'm crossing, and all of a sudden there's something honking, and like, you know, it's like, man, it's just some idiot. I'm like, okay. And then so I turn around and I look, and there's Norm and Laurie Joe and somebody else all waving crazy. And I'm like, wait, who is that? And then I looked and it was Norm. That was really a couple of years ago. And that, I believe that was the last, you know, that I saw him. Oddly, was in a car waving at me, you know, acting like an idiot, like we are. So, yeah, I didn't know he was sick. I mean, you know, I obviously, you know, dealt with his manager, Mark Gervitz, for, you know, many years. And, but I didn't, you know that. In fact, thinking back, maybe he was even, you know, diagnosed when we did the TBS thing. It wasn't that long ago. So I've known people that worked with him. So he obviously was kind of keeping that, you know, under wraps and for you know, whatever, for many reasons, probably. But
yeah, once you release that, it takes everything over, right?
Yeah, then yes, exactly. I think, you know, it's like, well, then it's hard for somebody to go, oh, I feel sorry for, you know, how is that? And you're like, that's not the persona on stage, unless I want to talk about it and I'm doing that whole thing, which I don't think Norm, you know, that's not his thing.
Right. But he did write his own epithet. I mean, with the thing about his uncle having bowel cancer, like he wrote his own last line. Like everybody's been using that in their obituaries of, you know, it's a draw.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, there's good. In fact, I just read a really good appreciation by Jason Zinnemann, you know, in the New York Times. I don't know if you've seen it, but you should check it out. You know, that kind of talks about his comedy and who he was and that. I thought, you know, Jason did a great job encapsulating Norm and what he's about. I mean, there's so many tributes now because, you know, as you said, Norm has been around for 30 years. He's touched so many people, so many generations, done so many things that, you know, you've seen him. He's been in your life, like, you know, for all those years, from Saturday Night Live to this, to that, the guests and things. So there's this whole great amount of material out there of doing really what he does best. You know,
yeah, he's got so much stand-up and so many talk show appearances, like people have just been throwing them up everywhere. It's a really interesting way to watch, you know, like I said, a requiem. Like people are building this whole, you know, experience of Norm. And it's going to go for a while. And, but it's kind of interesting that he's like a comedian who, like you said, did have longevity. The young audiences still like him. He's not passe. He still has some relevance. And man, he just seems like universal love for him.
Yeah. I mean, that's because I think, you know, as his character, Norm the character, grew as he grew, as he ate, you know, he just got better and better doing. Really from his point of view. And that's kind of the lesson the stand-ups is, you know, it's like be you, you know, you at 50 should just be the comedian you were at 20, but 30 years later, you know, so I grow with you, you know, and I think that's always important for getting in this business.
Well, it's fascinating for me to watch it from a performance kind of theory standpoint of, you see this with Stanhope, Louis C.K., all these guys that work the darker edges. They tend to like send friendly signals off all the time. and they may be faux friendliness.
Right.
But Norm was super friendly on stage, smiling, that gleam in his eye, that mischievousness. And so, like, you get the tone of all that coming at you, but then these dark things coming out of nowhere to slap you upside the head, or these ideas and perspectives. And I think that, you know, I think that he was so good at it. Like, even if you watch his early stuff, he just seemed like a super friendly, nice, regular guy. And that tone just sort of draped and saturated everything that he did.
Yeah. It was always a kind of a wink and a nod. Like, you knew, like, oh, hey, it's like, hey, ever think of this? And like, no, I never did, but you're going to, you know, you have, obviously. I think that comes through is there's a the boy, as they say, the boyish charm of that is like, somebody you want to kind of hang out with. So,
yeah. Do you know if there are any memorials or anything, any services? Are they doing any kind of eulogies or?
I imagine that they will. I mean, it kind of happened just the other day. So I'm sure that people will do that, I know that will happen.
Yeah. I watched it with Brody Stevens, sort of.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The last kind of fairly big character within the community, I think, that died. And just right. Again, like the way comedy community tries to deal with this, it's really different than how most communities try to deal with somebody, checking out.
Well, I think we had talked, and I had talked to people about, the idea of a podcast about just this.
Yeah.
Because, what happens is because people have, huge, there's decades of fans of, and the comedian touches so many people, when Norm started, some comedians that are out there now and really popular are probably, 11 years old.
Right.
Now they're 41 years old. And it's like, yeah, but I was influenced by them and that him. And I also then got to work with, I opened for him. I did, that's what happened to all of us. And, telling these stories kind of keeps, we know the stuff we've seen, but you don't know the behind the scenes or what other comedians look at technique wise and how he worked and how they were influenced by him. So yeah, it is a podcast you don't want to headline because you won't be around, but it is still interesting to me because there's so many people that have passed now that, if you can tell an interesting story of their life and fill that in with people's real experiences and some of their jokes and comedy seems like to be an interesting thing. But yeah, what do I know?
What do you know? you don't talk to somebody who knows something.
It seems to know.
I think like we talk about that, just the great stand-ups who never really made it huge into TV, like the Dennis Wolfbergs and the Regi and Rich Jenny and these guys that really were great, and they're just faded now. Nobody remembers them. Yeah, they were genius what they were doing.
Right. Yeah, no, and those were the kind of the pioneers in that from that 70s, 80s, 90s that influences those. And so we'll see. Put it on my list of things.
Well, cool, man. This has been super fun. I really, when you suggested this, I'm like, yes, I definitely want to hear
it. And as I said, Norm and I, for the past 30 years have kind of had that parallel sort of experience and fun and hanging out and would see each other. And, so happy to talk about it.
Yeah, cool. Well, once again, everybody, go out there and check out as much Norm Macdonald as you can. I think his stuff will last. I do wish at some point there was like a really great compendium warehouse of just stand up all in one place. So if I wanted to watch 10 hours of Norm Macdonald, it's right there at a button.
Right.
Because it doesn't really, poaching it and trying to find pieces isn't the same thing as getting the full experience of what that guy did, for 30 years. So,
yep.
But, this has been Community
Matter.
This has been Rhetoric Warriors podcast. Eddie Feldman, Norm Macdonald. I posted a joke about, I think he's probably at the gates of heaven, bemusedly explaining irony to Saint Peter. I didn't mean that stuff.
Yeah. I would say Norm would be note to self, don't die.
Not to sell. Yeah. Hilarious. Okay, man. We'll see you again.
Yep. Okay. Bye.